Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, welcome to Siempre Pa'lante. Pa'lante.
Hola mi gente, welcome to Siempre Pa'lante, Always Forward. I'm your host, Hiraldo Luis Alvarez. Gracias for listening. In this episode, our guest ensures we are presente in every conversation. Roots in La República Dominicana y Colombia are not the only thing that has shaped him. 10217 64th Road in Queens, New York gave him priceless experiences with Bodies of Culture, a community that was and still is familia. Whether he is acting in the latest TV sitcom, discussing his latest book, Brown Enough, interviewing a guest on his show, or reminding people that Porfirio Ruby Rosa was the real James Bond, he is creating spaces for Bodies of Culture too. Please welcome actor, author, podcaster, and storyteller, Christopher Rivas. So we're going to get right into it. Con la carne con papas, man. We're going to start cooking in the kitchen. For all the listeners out there, the millions and millions of listeners, who is Christopher Rivas?
Christopher Rivas, how can I surprise myself with this answer? The Buddhist in me is always like, we get asked a lot of questions about who we are. And I think one of the traps is believing that's who we are. But it's also one of the things that can set us free. You know, in my work, I believe in the power of words so much. What I say next has so much power to either keep me in a box or set me free. But this morning, Christopher Rivas is an artist and is a storyteller who is interested in creating exciting content and stories that disrupt traditionally white spaces. But the content is fun because sugar helps the medicine go down and we all need a little more beauty in our lives.
Peace. Now that was the beautifully well said elevator pitch introduction. We're going to go right into it with more seasoning and more ingredients. We're going to create something special for everyone in this episode. So your journey, it's about finding yourself and who you are as a person and really what you bring to the table, but also creating opportunities, not just for yourself, but our people. And when I say our people, I want our audience to understand brown people, right? Latinos, there's that in between. And Chris really goes in on that. Let's start a little bit in the beginning. A young Chris growing up, you shared a lot about these influences. Tell me about some of these special influences of culture, of familia that started triggering things. What were some of the things that really led you to this path?
I don't know why this is, because my parents were extremely loving. You've read stories about them. You meet them in the podcast. My parents are the best. But I don't know why as a little kid, I didn't really like who I was. There was something inherent, or maybe it wasn't inherent, maybe it was societal, maybe it wasn't seeing myself represented. I knew that I wanted to find my voice. I didn't have language for that, but I was always looking for my voice and I was using art or things to find my voice, and I never really found it. And then I saw John Leguizamo on Broadway, and I always talk about this, and you know, he's Colombian, I'm half Colombian, he's from Queens, I'm from Queens. And I sort of saw my voice in his voice. And I saw him just telling his story. He wasn't pretending to be anything. He was just who he was. And I felt like I never had the courage or the ability to really be who I was. And this was a real defining moment for me. This is the big argument. Representation matters. Easy to say, you got to feel it to understand it. Because I didn't have these nice words, you know, as a 13-year-old kid. I just went home, jumped in the shower, started doing my own one-man show. You just feel it. It just takes you over, finds the cracks inside of you. So I went to performing arts high school, and like I used the John Leguizamo monologue to get into that high school. And I sort of let theater be my guiding point for which I would start to find myself and my voice. Fast forward, I even studied it in college. Art became this way I would get closer to myself. It really didn't crack open until the Porfirio Ruby Rosa article. Until my homie sent me an article about Porfirio Ruby Rosa, the Dominican man James Bond was based on, that everything sort of cracked open for me. Why I didn't really like myself as a kid, why my parents didn't teach me Spanish as a kid. Some of the things people in my family said to my parents about trying to be white. All of it just came crashing down. Me being a brown person in Hollywood, trying to be an actor. Who did I have to look up to? What roles? You know, all of it came into this one force. And I started writing about that experience. I started feeling my difference, my brownness from that moment. So that was like one of the big defining moments. Yeah.
I feel you're still tapping into things, your history, your culture, your upbringing, because the journey you take us on in your book, Brown Enough. And by the way, anybody, if you haven't caught Brown Enough, listen, there's many ways you can purchase this book. It's an amazing book. Cop it, mi gente. It's worth the read 10 times over. So growing up as a child, you're exposed to all these things. What are some of the things that really gave you joy in your culture? You have two beautiful cultures, brother. You got Colombia y la República Dominicana. What were some of the things that you still have these moments like, wow, this was amazing. And to this day, you carry that with you.
The first thing is family. We were around a lot of people a lot. We weren't alone. There was four of us, you know, my mom, my dad, me, my sister. And then there's so many more around us all the time. Grandmas, aunts, cousins, but even chosen family. And with that came a celebration, came like a loudness, came a fun. Sure, there was their tiffs and their spats, but we went to a lot of parties when I was a kid. I remember that. A lot of gatherings. And music was loud and the food was good and people were loud and people were laughing. And there was a celebratory nature that I think is so beautiful, specifically in Latinidad. But I actually think this is in brown bodies of culture in general. This is why I say bodies of culture, not bodies of color, because our cultures are so vibrant. Of course, whiteness is trying to make money off of it. They're not trying to take our color. They want our vibrancy. They want our flavors. They want our dances. They want our hips. They want our moves. So that's what I remember as a kid really loving. Of course, the food, it seems obvious, but it is worth noting. It helps that I grew up in New York, Queens specifically, because I had the Dominican food made by Dominicans. I had the Colombian food made by the Colombians. You know, like it's the source. And in places that could feel like you are in Medellin or like Bogota or Santo Domingo. So I would say, yeah, the music, the food, and the people. And there's something about loudness that I'm leaning towards today because I was just in Mexico City, and I think about the difference between a Mexico City and somewhere else in America. There's a freedom to play, and that play really inspired me and I think helped me become the person I am today, and I never want to lose it.
I don't think you will. I feel you're constantly searching and finding that balance through spirituality and through familia and through your journey. I feel that, and you know, it resonates a lot. Did you know, sabías que? Christopher Rivas worked on the Fox series Call Me Cat. He also hosts two podcasts on SiriusXM Stitcher, Ruby Rosa, a limited series about the life of Porfirio Ruby Rosa, and a weekly show, Brown Enough. His book, Brown Enough, true stories about love, violence, the student loan crisis, Hollywood, race, familia, and making it in America, is a masterclass in owning your narrative. Christopher is at the table and in the room where it happens, inviting others to grow with him. Go support mi hermano, buy a book or two, and tell him Hidalgo sent you. Now back to the show. Through that music, through the food, through people having those conversations, was there an instant where at an event you're like, man, I'm having such a good time, and you had this really impactful conversation? We can go positive, or it can be in a way that it really caused you to scratch your head, but then it made you better because then you're like, wait a second. There's got to be more to this.
The first things I'm leaning towards, I don't think are revolutionary, which is unfortunate. I think of the many comments about anyone in my family who was of darker complexion, who got called negrito or negrita. I think of my grandmother telling me to pinch my nose to make it thinner. I think of the little jokes that my parents and my sister would make about me being adopted, because I had the biggest nose and the biggest lips, the curliest hair, and they were funny, quotation marks, you know, but you're like, they start to hurt because what they're saying is you're different. I think about someone saying to my father, yeah, you're trying to be white now, and what that means. And that's a term that I think gets thrown around probably to this day a lot within communities of culture. And what are we saying with, are you trying to be white? We're saying, are you trying to have power? Are you trying to have mobility? Those are some of the things that stand out to me. Let's not get it twisted. You know, I also had a grandmother who would tell me every day, you're the best actor in the world. She's probably one of the early manifestors. People have been doing it for centuries. Or the power of words, right? I have a chapter, Words Are Spells in Your Mouth. And she would always tell me, you're the best actor in the world. But she would also have me say, I'm the best actor in the world. I'm the best actor in the world. I'm the best actor in the world. Because our words matter. They set us free or they put us in a perpetual cage. So I had that too. You know, I had a lot of love. And then I also had those comments of difference. So those are some of the things that pop out to me.
Those things have impacted you so much in that constant journey that you're on to learn more about yourself and learn about other cultures. And I love what you say about bodies of culture. When I first heard that, I was like, that makes so much sense. Can they replace these other words they use with bodies of culture? Because it's encompassing of all cultures.
It's encompassing. Yeah. It makes us less me versus you versus them versus us. This culture is what makes us beautiful. And there's more culture in the world than anything else. And that culture unites us. I love the word. We are certainly not our color. James Baldwin said a long time ago, white people get to crawl and then get to walk. We are born on a treadmill. Hopefully we can run. Maybe I put that in my own words a little, but like, and so there is this narrative that has existed for a long time. And I'm not saying it's wrong, but there's this narrative that says bodies of culture have to work twice as hard, right? A black woman in corporate America has to work seven times as hard to make three times as less. And so this narrative, I don't think is wrong, but I've been thinking about unplugging. What does it mean to unplug from whiteness, to unplug from their narrative, to unplug from their design, to unplug from their systems, to unplug from their oppression? And to say a couple options. One is I don't have to work harder. I get to. I get to do this, but I don't have to, because I don't have to play your game, because it's your rules. It's your race. I don't want to run your race. I'm on my own track. So what does it look like if we sort of begin to rest from whiteness, to unplug from whiteness, and to say, like, you've been telling me to work this freaking hard. That's because I've been thinking that I'm running your race. There's no race to run. I get to be here. I get to rest. I get to be myself. I get to be enough. Not enough when whiteness tells me I'm enough. I'm enough right here, right now. And so I get to unplug from the narrative of working twice, three, four times, 100 times as hard. Because right here, right now, I'm enough. I'm not saying that's right. I've been thinking about it. Yeah.
That's powerful. And it rings true, because if you really pay attention to what's going on in the world, again, there's this narrative. And what you're saying is unplugging from that and creating your narrative, creating your space, creating opportunities where bodies of culture can participate, can create, can thrive. You've heard the saying of the room where it happens. Shout out to Lin-Manuel, you know. When I heard the phrase, I'm like, yeah, we're not in the room where it happens. So how do we get in there? And why is it a constant struggle to get in there? But then on the flip side, I've had mentors say, well, you got to create your opportunities, create your space, and create another room. If you can't be at the table, build the table. We have to be in both. We cannot just shut it down completely, because a lot of the resources are in that bigger narrative. But at the same time, we have to figure a way to be a hybrid. Create the space, create the room, as you're doing, or what you're doing with your book, acting, podcast, speaker, you're doing everything. But at the same time, you're still in those spaces too. Now they're like Christopher Rivas, right? Where before it was like, we don't know. But now you're getting in there slowly but surely and creating those two. So share with me a little bit about that, being in the room where it happens, but also creating your room so that others can thrive.
Two opposing ideas can exist at the same time. That's like one of the beauties of life. That's very Zen. Do nothing, you're doing everything. It's not everyone's job to save the day. It's not everyone's job to take all the risk. For some people, so I go back to this, like working 100 times harder, the treadmill versus the game of whiteness. Some people are doing that for us right here, right now. Some people are freaking, they're running, they're working 100 times harder to not receive a check, but to sign a check. Because I do always say that. We live in a capitalistic society and nothing really changes systemically until people like us are the ones signing checks, not receiving them. It's a top-down approach. And so as much as I said, unplug from whiteness, it helps to know the rules. And then to make a conscious decision, do I want to play this game? Can my heart handle it? Or is it going to take too much from me? Because I respect and honor those people. We need those people who say, I'm not going to let them take so much from me. Because it takes a lot to be in the room where it happens. It takes a lot to create the room where it happens. It takes a lot of energy. It takes a lot of spirit. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of sleep. It takes a lot of tears. That's not everyone's job. But if for some reason you woke up one day and spirit said to you, this is your work, then it's your work. But understand that you can walk away at any minute and you did not lose. I believe in balance. Spirituality has helped me a lot in order to be like, I'm going to play the game. I'm going to play the game with the courage to know that I can walk away at any minute when it feels right. But I'm still here and I still believe I have things to do, things to make, rooms to create. I say this, I want to be a good ancestor. And I believe if I get to that place where I'm going, where I can sign a bunch of checks, make people's jobs easier, I would have left something nice behind. But also, if I walk away, I did something powerful. It's powerful to say, like, I don't have to do it anymore. I get to rest. Again, two things can exist. It's just about being conscious and honest about what you can handle and what you want to do and why. It's really the why. Why do I want to sign checks? We're chasing feelings, not things. I don't want to sign a check to get a Maserati. I want to sign a check so that 10,000 young bodies of culture can study theater for free. That's leaving a legacy to me. Yeah.
Mi gente, when you get a chance, take it a step further after you listen. Help support Siempre Pa'lante by making a donation. This helps keep the lights on and, more importantly, brings you more cultural content and live events. Instead of buying that cafecito or fresh bagel, visit linktree.com/sp.alwaysforward. linktr.ee/sp.alwaysforward. Or go to the show notes for more info. Gracias. As you were sharing, I was thinking about how in the room where it happens, in the room we create, you can compare it a lot to our parents coming to this country and assimilating, leaving behind, which is not easy. And I feel reading about your family and what you shared with your mom and dad and them just making it happen and nonstop. There's a lot of sacrifices made. And to me, I feel like it was powerful when you said to stop at a moment when I can just stop and I'm okay with it. What breaks my heart is that our ancestors never had that choice. They had to sacrifice continuously and give up their dreams so that we can walk in the next generation. What does that mean to you? Because I know you shared a lot about your family and your parents and the sacrifices they made. What does that mean to you?
First, I hope you're right, because I was just chatting with my friend, Pakistani. We were talking about ancestors. And I said, Afan, what would your ancestors think of you? And he said, I think they would be disappointed. And I said, no way. He was like, one, I ain't married. You know, I'm not like building a family. I said, but you're going after your dreams. He said, what if dreams don't mean shit to them? And I was like, no, it does. Because they didn't have the opportunity doesn't mean, whether consciously or unconsciously, they weren't doing what they were doing so that you could be here in Mexico City, growing up in Queens, with your diversity, chasing music, being an artist, right? So I agree with you There is my other friend who's got his own thoughts. I never thought about ancestors until pretty recently. I didn't have the ability in me to see past and future, to see past present even. And then this work started. And the more I do this work, the more I think about ancestors. You know, I mentioned being a good ancestor. Like, I'm trying to imagine myself. All right, here's this thing I'm obsessed with lately. It's a fun fact. If I put you in an MRI and I ask you to think of your wife, your brain would light up. If I ask you to think of your kid, machine lights up. If I ask you to think of yourself, the machine lights up like crazy. If I ask you to think of your favorite barista who you see maybe a couple times a week, the machine lights up, but it lights up less than the kid and the partner. If I ask you to think of even further acquaintance, it lights up even less. That makes sense. So if I ask you to think of you in 5 years, the machine lights up. 10 years, lights up, but it lights up a little less. 15 years, even less. 20 years. Most humans can't light up their brain to think about themselves 25 years from now. Like, we can't actually think about ourselves in the future. And so it's interesting when we're talking about ancestry, or we're talking about taking care of the planet, you know, or we're talking about all of this stuff, leave a good world for your kids. I can't even see myself 25 years from now. It's all like, do you want a dollar right now or $10 a year from now? 95% of people say, give me the dollar right now. And so this ability in us to perceive ancestry, what came before us, what they did for us, what the sacrifices they made, and to think about a legacy that we want to leave behind for this planet, for our loved ones, for the people we don't even know, for our family, healing traumas, all this stuff, we have a hard time doing it. Expanding ourselves to think and feel in that way. I've been thinking about that a lot. So ancestry, I didn't think about it. And the more I do this work, the more I get closer to myself. Isn't that the beauty? The more I get closer to myself, who I am, the more I start to feel what came before me and the sacrifices they made. And what an incredible, beautiful thing that my dad's mother got the call in her to leave a very nice life in Santo Domingo and to go struggle in America. Something my dad thought was so stupid. But without it, I don't get to do all this stuff and have these conversations. How beautiful that my mom's mother, when my mother's 8 years old, gets this inkling to leave this life in Colombia and again, go struggle in America. Why? Why go struggle there? And my parents get to meet and they make something beautiful, and there's just so many things that had to go right in order for us to be here today. It is like the most fine game of chess. And I choose to be grateful for it versus angry at it, because that exists too. You can tell the story however you want to.
I think about my dad having that gumption, that just being bold, I mean, and standing up to the family and to my grandfather, who my grandfather was the patriarch. Fichicho, God rest his soul, man, he respected it. He gave him the blessing. My grandmother on the other side wasn't too happy. She was the fiery one in the family. May she rest in peace. But yeah, it really makes you think. And then it takes you to the present. You talk about bodies of culture, and one thing that really resonates a lot was your interaction, not just with your family, but where your dad worked in the apartment building, right? Like, you engage with so many people on a daily basis. You interacted, and that had to play an influence on you. It did play an influence on you to create the person you are today, because you learned about different cultures and people and the bodies of culture, right? Share with me a little bit about that and some of those things that you could be having your morning coffee, your tea, and you're just like, man, I remember this was a good moment.
Yeah, my dad was a superintendent of a 164-unit building in Queens. For those who don't know the term, a super is this maybe porter, maybe handyman, a little bit of both, a little bit more than that, just kind of like runs the building, gets the complaints, gets the gratitude, gets a lot of things. My dad was very good at this. Beyond the fact that he could fix something or solve a problem, he made people feel good. and a lot of different type of people. He saw them. He saw every race and nationality and religion, and he honored it in the building. I remember how every Christmas looked, every Hanukkah, he honored it with something in the building. And I have family in the building, literally. I have my best friend in the building. I have my godfather in the building. I have my godfather's partner in the building. I have my grandma in the building. I have my aunt in the building. I have my sister's best friend in the building. So like we were just constantly running around the building. We were so connected to so many people that my parents felt comfortable enough to go on vacation and leave two teenagers alone in the house because they knew the building would watch us. I didn't have language at the time. It just was. But it was an incredible experience of seeing diversity in all its beauty. Again, a thing we talk about, but until you feel it, the smells, the sounds, the different ways people argue, the different ways people show love, the different ways people commune and eat and play, and musics, it was all there. And it was so beautiful looking back. It was so, 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 so beautiful. I knew people's names. I knew everyone's names. Everyone knew my name. You're lucky, I think, for a lot of people, if you know one or two of your neighbors now. That was me and my pops. He spoke enough Russian to speak with the Russian cats. I always say this. He spoke street to speak with the street cats. He spoke white. He spoke Spanish. He spoke everything. He spoke multiple tongues and multiple languages. And that taught me a lot about how to see people, how to move through the world, how to shape shift, how to code switch. Again, things I didn't have language for until later. And tremendous gratitude, tremendous, tremendous, tremendous gratitude for that time.
I feel you've tapped into that more and more, the more you've learned about yourself in your journey.
What up, fam? This is Christopher Rivas. You are tuned in to Siempre Palante. We are happy to have you. I love you. I'm grateful for you. Peace.
So tell me a little bit about you engaging with spirituality and balance and focus now and how this impacts the legacy you're creating.
My version of spirituality now is so many things, but the basis of it is that every human being desires to be seen and to know that they belong. I believe that is true. So much of what we do is to know we are enough. We are worthy of being seen, heard, that we are in safe spaces of belonging. If I relate it back to my building, which I don't do a lot in regards to spirituality, so I like this question. So much of me and my internals didn't like who I was. I didn't like my nose. I didn't like my hair. I didn't like who I was as a kid. And yet in that building, I knew I belonged. Amongst all those different people, I knew I was safe. I knew I was seen. I knew I belonged. I knew I was loved and cared for. And that was a really nice feeling. It's a nice feeling. It feels good. It feels peaceful. The only issues were in my internals and in my mind and in my inner sort of spirit, because I was coming up against so much childhood. It's funny, that chapter in the book, I just kind of wrote it, but it's a lot of people's favorite chapter. Brings them a lot of joy. 10217 64th Road. That's where I grew up. Yeah, it really speaks to people, which I find interesting. I didn't think that would be one of the chapters that pop out so much. But maybe there's something in that. Maybe universally, we all want that family. We all want that diversity of family. And we all want to go home at the end of the day. Or forget home. We want to go to work. We want to go constantly into spaces where we are seen, loved, and we belong. And I think that ties into the art I am making now and the choices I make. I choose to invest in spaces where I feel that way, and I choose to create spaces that allow others to feel that way.
Very powerful, man. To round out this amazing conversation, legacy. This all leads to legacy. What is your legacy? What does legacy mean to you?
When I was 20, who were all the great artists? Did they die at 27? Your Janis Joplin, your Kurt Cobain, your Jimi Hendrix. There was a version of me at 26. I was like, I didn't make it. I didn't do all this by 26. Damn. I used to think legacy was that. a great body of work. And yet, maybe I will have a great body of work, a diverse body of work. That's a goal of mine, is to have a diverse body of work, to say, like, you know, you could do it all. But the legacy I really want to leave behind is I allow people, everyone, not just bodies of culture, I allowed people to take a deeper breath than they have breathed before. I allowed lots of people, let's just throw out a number, let's just say whatever, I allowed millions of people to get closer to their enoughness. And that enoughness is contagious, and that allowed a million more to feel enough. Yeah, that's my legacy. I allowed millions of people to know that they are enough.
Gracias, Christopher, for sharing your story. You're building a narrative that includes bodies of culture to be seen, heard, and respected. I hope others are taking notes, because class is always in session when you're on the mic. Our world is in good hands, knowing your voice ensures we are presente. Te deseo lo mejor y más. Mi gente, don't forget to rate, review, follow, like, subscribe, and share. You can find the show via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Check the show notes to learn more about Christopher Rivas. A Palante shout out goes to my editor, Santiago, guests, familia, and listeners. Gracias for your support. Our final episode of season 2 is next week. Don't forget to tune in and tell a friend. Hasta la próxima. Palante.